Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm your host, Ira Melman. The United States remembered civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. this past week. One motion picture relives the times.
We must stand up. We must make a massive demonstration of our moral certainty.
Penelope Pulu is in the cafe with a look at the film Selma. A museum in Washington has made its treasures available to all.
It's really important to us that everybody who wants to see the objects that we have has access to them.
Julie Tabo has the story of a treasure trove of art now online. And Elizabeth Lee checks in from Los Angeles on a decision to permit undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license.
They're always afraid about the police. You can stop and take your car, and you have to pay a lot of money to get by the car.
All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. In March of 1965, 600 people, led by U.S. civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., set out from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, in a nonviolent march for free and fair voting rights. State troopers attacked the protesters at the edge of the city. The violence galvanized voting rights activists. A few weeks later, U.S. President Lyndon Johnson introduced the Voting Rights Act in a televised address to Congress. The legislation guaranteed the right to vote regardless of race or ethnicity. On March 25th, another march, this time with some 25,000 people, successfully completed the 80-kilometer distance from Selma to the steps of the Capitol in Montgomery. Filmmaker Ava DuVernay interprets these events in her epic drama, Selma. VOA's Penelope Pulo is in the cafe with more.
We the people of the United States. In order to form a more perfect union.
How many county judges in Alabama?
67.
Name them.
The docudrama Selma opens at the registrar's office in Selma, Alabama, where civil rights activist Annie Lee Cooper is trying in vain to register to vote. From that moment on, the film takes the audience on a roller coaster ride through the events that led up to the Selma marches in March 1965.
You march those people into rural Alabama, unprotected, it's going to be open season.
Then propose new legislation.
Selma, by filmmaker Ava DuVernay, also interprets a complex relationship between American President Lyndon Johnson and the leader of the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
We must stand up. We must make a massive demonstration of our moral certainty.
Ava DuVernay's interpretation of a reluctant President Johnson has drawn criticism by Johnson loyalists.
Cannot wait.
You've got one big issue, I got 101.
But the filmmaker says the story is about much more than just Lyndon Johnson. She says it's a celebration of people who did something amazing, and it was a big challenge for the actors.
As long as I am unable to exercise my constitutional right to vote, I do not have command of my own life. I cannot determine my own destiny, for it is determined for me by people who would rather see me suffer than succeed.
David Oyelowo interprets Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
You can't play an icon. You can't play a historical figure. You can play a man, and that I know how to do. I'm a father of four myself. I'm a Christian myself. You know, these were the things I shared with Dr. King that I held on to, and then I felt I had to open myself up to that and hope that the spirit that flowed through him flows through me for the purpose of the film, and I felt that doing this movie.
Both David Oyelowo and Selma filmmaker Ava DuVernay have received acclaim and may be headed to the Oscars. In that case, Ava DuVernay would be the first ever African-American female movie director to receive such an honor.
To be on that bridge and to actually stand where the real people stood, where the real people bled, where the real people cried, where the real people marched and laughed together and held hands like that. That, you know, is in the DNA of the place.
One of the real people was John Lewis, then a young student played by Stephen James. Today, Congressman Lewis remembers and relates that time to the present.
Today, I think the young people and those not so young can learn from this film. They will learn not to give up, not to become bitter, never to hate, but to continue the struggle, because the struggle to redeem the soul of America is an ongoing struggle.
And while the filmmaker of Selma did not know while filming the events that would spark civil unrest in Ferguson, Missouri last August, it is impossible to sit through 2 hours of Selma's depiction of the events 50 years ago and not sense their relevance today. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
A major museum in Washington, D.C. recently put its entire collection online, providing unprecedented access to one of the world's most important holdings of Asian and American art. The vast majority of the 40,000 artworks has never been seen by the public before and can now be downloaded in many cases for free. VOA's Julie Tabo gives us a glimpse of some of the collection's vast high-resolution offerings and has this report.
The objects have deep cultural and historical significance. They include Chinese ceramics and Islamic art, masterworks from Persia, objects from Egypt and around Asia, and even works of art by American-born artist James McNeil Whistler. Now they're available online, a digital first for two Smithsonian museums in Washington, the Freer and Sackler Galleries. More than 40,000 objects digitized and released online.
It's really important to us that everybody who wants to see the objects that we have has access to them.
Courtney O'Callaghan is the chief digital officer at the Freer and Sackler Galleries.
We're hoping that small children, kids doing homework assignments, scholars who are unable to come to the Smithsonian, artists who are looking for inspiration, these are all our target audiences.
Perfect specimen of its type.
Jan Stewart, curator of Chinese art at the Freer and Sackler Galleries, agrees.
It's starting something that's going to accelerate research as well as just please everybody who loves beauty, who's interested in history, who's interested in civilization.
It took 15 years to shoot and digitize the thousands of objects, from textiles and paintings to sculptures and ancient manuscripts. Digitizing the collection had another benefit: conservation of the delicate treasures.
It allowed us to gather these beautiful high-resolution images of objects so that we don't have to bring them out again, we don't have to touch them.
O'Callaghan says there are many benefits to seeing digital versions of art. When viewed in person, for example, it's difficult to see the details of Whistler's famed Peacock Room due to the low lighting conditions that help preserve the exhibit. But this digital panoramic view highlights the more than 250 ceramics that museum founder Charles Lang Freer collected on his travels to Egypt, Iran, Japan, China, and Korea. The museum also captured objects at a 360-degree angle and in three dimensions.
Here's an amazing sculpture that has very detailed relief pattern on it that is very hard to see with the naked eye. And with using 3D, not only are people able to see all around this object, but they're able to change the lighting and change the color, and has really helped scholars better understand the stories on it.
O'Callaghan believes making art accessible online will be a growing trend for museums and says the galleries plan to digitize every work of art added to the collection. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
Undocumented immigrants in California can now drive legally under a new state law. More than a million people are expected to apply for driver's licenses. Even though California is not the first U.S. state with such a law, it does have the largest number of undocumented immigrants in the country. Correspondent Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
The line at the driver's license office is so long, it is out the front door and wrapped around the building. But many of the people who are waiting do not mind, including Christian Alvarado.
It's so exciting, you know? For a long time, waiting for the license.
Originally from El Salvador, Alvarado is an undocumented immigrant, also known as an illegal immigrant. He works as a gardener, and in the 8 years he's been in the United States, this is the first time he has been able to apply for a driver's license in California. Once he proves his identity and California residence, passes a vision test and a written and driving exam, he can get a license and drive without constant fear.
They're always afraid about the police
can stop and take your car, and you have to pay a lot of money to get by the car.
Alvarado was caught driving without a license once, and that cost him $800. Many undocumented immigrants drove without a license before the new law. Jaime Rodriguez says he had no choice because he has a job and a family to support.
You live with fear sometimes, and you need to do it. You need to leave.
Since the beginning of the year, when the law went into effect, tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants have applied for a license. Yarida Pisano, who works as a nanny, says with a license, she can drive in peace without the fear of losing her car. While the new law alleviates the fears of many undocumented immigrants, it also creates new fears among some people. It includes the concern about providing personal information to a government agency and the fear of being deported in the future. But California Department of Motor Vehicle spokesman Armando Botello says people should not worry.
California DMV does not share our data file with authorities, only in the case of a specific case when somebody is the suspect or being investigated in relation to a felony. And that has to be a very specific person, and it has to be a request from the authorities.
The new license looks just like a regular one, with a photo of the driver. There's one exception. The top right corner says, federal limits apply. The license cannot be used to board an airplane or enter a federal building. Ana Garcia with the Central American Resource Center says, some immigrants have another concern.
There's just also another fear that, you know, they're going to be treated differently, they're going to be discriminated against, or that, you know, just a regular police officer can, you know, see that they're undocumented and then call immigration themselves.
Civil rights groups say it is against the law to discriminate against people with the license, and it is supposed to be a benefit. But not everyone is in favor of the new law, says University of Southern California political scientist Dan Schnur.
The argument against the driver's license bill for years and years now has been that it rewards illegal behavior.
But Schnur says public opinion in California has shifted in favor of undocumented immigrants.
Young white voters, young Caucasians, are overwhelmingly in favor of broader immigration reform, this issue included, simply because they grew up in a much different type of society, a much more multicultural society than their parents or their grandparents did.
At window number 14.
He says he believes the changes in attitudes and laws on immigration will spread to the rest of the country over time. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Once only used by the military or by hobbyists, unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drones, are quickly becoming cheap but valuable tools for various professionals, from rescue squads to farmers. A company in France uses drones to help farmers analyze their crops. More from VOA's George Putich.
And it doesn't break.
Rapid development of computer technology, image sensing devices, satellite navigation, new materials, even smartphones within the past decade enabled researchers and developers to build smaller and cheaper unmanned aerial vehicles that are now entering many segments of our daily lives. The film industry is increasingly using them for taking stunning aerial shots. Historians use them when they explore ancient ruins. Rescue and recovery teams use them to look for survivors. Even farmers use drones to monitor their crops. A farmer's son, French entrepreneur Romain Farou, saw the usefulness of drones in the farming industry. The company Air Innov that he co-founded developed a light remote-controlled flying wing called AgriDrone, which uses a special optical sensor to analyze crops in the field.
The technology used is one similar to the one used by smartphones, but now with wings. The industrialization of electronic parts for smartphones and tablets allowed us to have them, those GPSs and inertial measurement units, at a very low price.
A computer program creates the drone's flight pattern to cover the whole plot, while the sensor records four different bands of sunlight reflected off the crops, red, green, and two bands of infrared. Farmer Jean-Baptiste Brugmont says flying the drone at different times of the season and analyzing the recorded data gives a whole range of information about the plants.
J'y vois un premier intérêt qui est la possibilité d'apporter.
The first interest I see is the possibility to bring to plants the exact amount of fertilizer they need. The second use, by applying the right doses of fertilizer at the given place of the field, depending on the plant's needs. The excess of nitrogen after harvest is very low, so that is a benefit for nature.
Pour l'environnement.
Farou says the AgriDrone found that the amount of fertilizer varies between zones, showing where it can be cut and resulting in considerable cost savings and a reduction in pollution. Previously, a farmer would have applied the same amount everywhere. Drones also save time because it takes only about a minute to scan an area of up to 3 hectares. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Thousands of bird watchers in the United States, Canada, Latin America, and the Caribbean were out in force from mid-December to the beginning of January counting birds. They took part in the 115th Christmas Bird Count, sponsored by the National Audubon Society, a U.S. bird conservation organization. Data collected from the annual event is helping scientists understand how environmental changes affect birds. VOA's Deborah Block joined a group of bird watchers in the wetlands of Mount Vernon, Virginia, the famous home of the first U.S. President, George Washington.
Here at the Mount Vernon Estate, just south of Washington, this group is excited about seeing a variety of birds. Wow. Stuart Davis has even traveled to other countries in search of birds.
They come in so many different shapes and sizes. Their feathers are so beautiful. They do remarkable things like their acrobatic flying.
The bald eagle, the national symbol of the United States, has been making a comeback in recent years after once being on the endangered list. The birders see one in trees across the Potomac River.
I think it might be a juvenile eagle.
Some 70,000 bird enthusiasts in more than 2,400 locations took part this year in one of the world's largest, longest-running citizen science efforts.
I think it's really exciting to know that you're part of an event that includes thousands of people all over the country.
A list is kept of every bird seen or heard. Scientists use the data to better understand avian population trends. Harry Glasgow has been taking part in the Christmas Bird Count for a decade.
I think it's a tremendous use of a lot of unofficial talent around the nation to keep track of birds. Birds are one of the surest indicators or barometers of the health of the ecology.
Gary Langham, chief scientist at the National Audubon Society, agrees. He says analysis of bird count data from the past 4 decades led to the conclusion of last year's report, common birds in decline.
The Audubon Climate Report says that half the birds in North America, 314 out of 588 species, are seriously threatened by climate change. The impact sort of cut across all birds, all sizes, all kinds, all places.
The data show that because of warmer winters, North American birds are shifting their winter ranges farther north. Birder Jamie Reedy has noticed the difference in Virginia.
You get to see them often at odd times of the year, something a little earlier, staying a little later.
Langham says other factors are also affecting bird populations.
You can imagine the birds that live along the beach or along the rocky shoreline. As sea levels are rising around the world, that is impacting them, you know, doubly so. You think about how much we've reduced wetlands, for example, upwards of 95% across the globe.
Langham says the fossil fuels contributing to climate change must be curtailed, and he calls for more conservation efforts to protect birds and their habitats. Without these steps, he warns, a number of bird species will be gone by the end of this century. And birders can't imagine living without them. Deborah Block, VOA News, Mount Vernon, Virginia.
The Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, held once a year in Las Vegas, Nevada, is one of the largest expos in the world. It is the mecca of technology where the latest innovations and gadgets are unveiled. Hamid Baravan has more for VOA on what was hot at the CES this year.
Each year's show has specific trends which set the tone for the year ahead in the consumer electronics business. Ultra HD TVs, which have 4 times the resolution of normal HD TVs, are all over the place this year. Samsung announced 9 new models, LG introduced more curved designs, and Sony said all its TVs will now be equipped with the Android TV operating system. Another trend in this year's CES is home automation via the internet. From connected dishwashers, stoves, and refrigerators to smart pots for houseplants. The challenge, though, is to come up with a standard to allow all the numerous devices and brands to communicate with each other. One of the hottest category of products in this year's show is wearable devices. Examples include a light therapy helmet that promotes hair growth, a device that helps reduce chronic pain, a ring that allows you to control other gadgets and devices with just gestures, a smart Bluetooth-enabled pacifier, and a beautiful necklace that connects to the user's mobile device for discreet alerts. 3D printers have seen major growth in the past year, and because of this growth, their prices have decreased significantly. Several models are even below the $1,000 mark. In addition to the large 3D printers, there is now a new 3D pen on the market that allows the users to draw 3D objects. The robotic world was also present in force, from modular cubic robots that help children learn programming to telepresent robots that allow users to be virtually present in remote locations. For VOA News, this is Hamed Behrabaan at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Osteoarthritis is a common condition seen in older people in which the tissue between joints becomes worn down, causing severe pain. In what could be an important development for people who suffer from it, U.S. researchers have isolated stem cells in adult mice that regenerate both worn tissue or cartilage and bone. VOA's Jessica Berman is in the American Cafe with the report.
For the past decade, researchers have been trying to locate and isolate stem cells in the spongy tissue or marrow of bones of experimental animals. The so-called osteochondroreticular or OCR cells are capable of renewing and generating important bone and cartilage cells. Researchers at Columbia University Medical Center in New York identified these master cells in the marrow. When grown in the lab and transplanted back into a fracture site in mice, they helped repair the broken bones. Siddhartha Mukherjee, the study's senior author, says similar stem cells can exist in the human skeletal system.
The real provocative experiment, the provocative idea is being able to do this in humans, being able to extract out these skeletal stem cells from humans and being able to put them back in and repair complex fracture defects or osteoarthritis defects.
He notes that children have more bone stem cells than adults, which may explain why the bones of young people repair more easily than fractures in adults. Mukherjee says the next step is to try to identify the OCR cells in humans and attempt to use them to repair complex bone and cartilage injuries. Once cartilage is injured or destroyed in older people, as in osteoarthritis, Mukherjee says it does not repair itself. The research was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health and the American Cancer Society, among others, and it's described in a paper published online in the journal Cell. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have for this week's program. Our thanks to executive producer Bob Doty. If you'd like to hear more about these stories, check our website at voanews.com. Also, our Facebook page at VOA American Cafe. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email from wherever you are to our studios in Washington, D.C. You can email us at americancafe@voanews.com. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman. We'll talk to you next time on American Cafe.